the topic tonight, making decisions. You know, there I was, making a decision. And even tonight, it was so interesting as I was coming here to share with you some reflections on this whole process of making decisions, and in particular, the difficult decisions in our life. And they can go from the very minor. So for example, I came in here and I had all these decisions to make. Should I sit down? Should I stand up? Should I use the podium? Should I use the musical stand? What should I do? What's the skillful decision? All these different options. And maybe you know what I'm talking about. You go to the grocery store, just picking out salad dressing. It's amazing how many options are thrown at us in this consumeristic culture. And that's just the grocery store. You know, sometimes it can be difficult to make a decision about what you're going to be doing this weekend. And then there's also bigger decisions that I'm sure many of you have been confronted with, depending upon the stage in your life. The decision about what your career is going to be. What kind of employment do you want to explore? What's your life direction? And yet at other points in our unfolding of our lives, it can be the difficult decisions around our health or medical issues. And there can be so much complexity around that, of what's actually the right answer, what's the wrong answer, what's the skillful way, what's the unskillful way. So in terms of our stage of life, and then the whole relational world, I'm sure like me, you've experienced where you have maybe some conflict with a friend or a family member or a child or a colleague or an employer. And it's that bind that you can feel inside of you, where it can feel like all of the options that you have are wrong, or all of the options that you have are right. And then you have to decide, what are you going to say to that person? What are you going to not say? How do you navigate maybe a challenge or difficulty that arises? And those kind of decisions can eat at us. I know they can eat at me in some kind of manner. So around all of these things, this big range, from the small to the big, the way I came upon deciding to share with you this talk is I couldn't decide. Here I am going to Salida, they want a title from me and some kind of description. That was perfect. Talk about my dilemma, how this is difficult for me. And also, even much bigger, the dilemmas that we face collectively that have an ethical valence to it. How do you make decisions around the environmental catastrophe that's facing us right now? Your day-to-day decisions. How do you actually respond to that? Or in terms of systemic racism, or in terms of income inequality? And the list goes on. It's challenging, isn't it, on this collective level? And I know for me, sometimes that's where I really feel the weight of deciding, when I feel that collective dimension of how my life is interwoven sometimes in these systems of oppression or the way that we treat our environment. So it's tough. And this is the realm I'd like to share with you at least some reflections. And I'd like to begin by sharing with you a Zen story that I think encapsulates the heart of what this spiritual path is about. And the story is about the Zen master Yun Men, who's the 9th, 10th century Zen master. And with all good Zen stories, it's usually a pretty simple narrative, right? A monk asks a Zen master. The same story, right? So a monk asks Yun Men, and Yun Men, some people think, was the most eloquent of Zen masters and so precise with so little words. And so the monk asks Yun Men, what are the teachings of a whole lifetime? Or what is the essence of this spiritual path that I'm following? And Yun Men said simply, an appropriate response. That's what a spiritual path is about, at least this spiritual path, is coming to find the appropriate response for this moment, and then to find the appropriate response for the next moment, and the next moment. The sense of practicality, the sense of fluidity that hopefully we learn through community and other aspects like ethical conduct and meditation. And this is what I keep in mind when I have the question, how do I make a skillful decision? Oh, this is the heart of my spiritual path, is finding an appropriate response. And then the other thing that I find helpful to remember when I'm up against a difficult decision, because often when I'm up against a difficult decision, what my mind thinks is, damn it, like, here I am obsessing over this decision, and I'd rather be just be in the now, be present. And so it feels like it's the difficult decisions in my life that take me off my course of my spiritual path. I hate them. I want to get rid of them. And so I need to remember a second aspect of the spiritual path. And seeing that it's the challenges in my life that actually are leading to a deeper sense of, you could say, a different way of being in this world. A deeper sense of the spiritual path. And the image that comes to mind is from this really great social activist and philosopher of the 20th century, Simone Weil. And she was speaking in a Christian context, and she gave this image to describe her experience. There was a time in her own spiritual unfolding where she felt completely severed from anything that was divine in her life. She had these really amazing mystical openings, and then that died. And she was struggling deeply. And so what she said she needed to remember was this simple phrase, and she had an image to go with it. The phrase was, the separation is the link. That which separates me from a spiritual path actually connects me. And then she gave this image of, if you imagine two prisoners, and two prisoners, what are they divided by? They're divided by this wall, and it's the wall that separates them. They can't communicate because there's a wall between them. They're imprisoned in their own little cell away from each other. It's the wall that separates them. And yet, when they begin to knock on it, it becomes the link, it becomes the medium for their connection. So that which separates them is the link to connection. And I need to remember this, really, for any difficulties in my life. Tonight will be around these challenges that sometimes can face us around making decisions. So maybe you can relate to some of this, the challenge of decision-making at times in your life. I just want to share with you a few points, again, around this specific topic, and in particular around difficult decisions. And what I've noticed for myself is what I need is to begin to get comfortable with the uncomfortable feeling of not knowing, is to begin to get comfortable with the uncomfortable feeling of uncertainty. Because that's what's going on in that moment when I'm struggling with a decision. Whether it be the salad dressing, or the talk I have to give tonight, or the greater questions around the environment or society. I have to slow down with that. And it's just the nature of decisions. right? Because I can't know the future. We can't know the future. I'm always taking a risk. I'm always guessing with each decision. And that becomes amplified with the difficult decisions. With the easy decisions, I don't have to think about that. It's just rolling on. It's those difficult decisions that I need to remember this. And again, another Zen story. Nice, because it's so short and to the point. This is what I love about the Zen tradition of Buddhism. And this is a story about two monastics. One was younger, Fayang. He went on a pilgrimage across China from temple to temple with a few friends. And they came upon this hermit, Dizong, who was really known for his wisdom. And when they came upon this hermit, Dizong, on their journey, Dizong asks Fayang, "Where are you going?" So I have to stop the story right here, because you have to remember, in Zen, when a Zen master is asking a question, it has kind of multiple levels. Kind of it's like, hey, where are you going? But it's also, hey, I'm going to test this young monastic and see if, you know, what is he worth? You know, how deep is his practice? Like, I'm really curious. And so there's this kind of poking and prodding that you find in the Zen tradition. So there's a lot to Dizong's question. And so he asks Fayang, "So where are you going?" And Fayang replies, "On pilgrimage, wherever my feet take me." And then Dizong presses further, "What do you expect from pilgrimage?" And Fayang says, "I don't know." And Dizong says, "Ah, not knowing is most intimate." That quality, not knowing is most intimate. That resting in not knowing. What would that be like around difficult decisions? Because our lives can be complex to get clear about these situations in our life that I've opened up. It might be right now. Here you come on to this talk on difficult decisions, and somebody's telling you just to rest in not knowing. How helpful is that? Beware. And I want to be clear about this kind of not knowing that I feel like Dizong is really trying to accentuate here. It's not the not knowing of ignorance, it's the not knowing of openness. And again, I find this really helpful, because when I have a difficult decision, I want it to be finalized and over. And a lot of times I'm feeling agitated and I want to come to a decision because I don't like that feeling of uncertainty. I want clarity. I want certainty, but the world's uncertain. And so I have to open up the space to just allow myself to not know, because it allows an opening rather than a confinement and a tightening. Can you relate to this when you reflect on difficult decisions? Like, wow, how our systems want that certainty. And how it's radically different to rest in not knowing, having that kind of intimacy with actually not knowing. And what I've noticed for me is when I can truly rest in not knowing, it doesn't mean I don't decide. What it means for me is I can decide more skillfully, because there's an openness there. There's not a rigidity. There's a clarity about what I'm deciding and the uncertainty that I'm still going ahead with. It feels completely different when I'm resting in that compared to when I'm reacting or pushing against that. And what I want to point out about Fayang is, I don't think he was trying to be some cool Zen monk. I think he was just being honest. He didn't know. And he's really simple about it. just that sense of simply not knowing and moving from there. So again, here's this first piece, really starting to rest in not knowing, not fighting it. Becoming intimate with that quality, moving from that place in your life. And it allows me to begin to touch another, word for this space, which I think this is pointing to, is this quality of ambivalence. Feeling ambivalent about a certain decision. For example, here's one definition of ambivalence: the coexistence within an individual of positive and negative feelings towards the same person or object or action simultaneously, drawing the individual in conflicting directions. Again, you know that feeling, right? Being torn in some way because you have these opposite feelings about the same thing, and then it makes it difficult to decide. You can't get yourself to say yes and are afraid to say no, or you can't get yourself to say no and are afraid to say yes. Feeling ambivalent. And this is part of the getting comfortable with the uncomfortable feeling of not knowing, the uncomfortable feeling of ambivalence. So how do I do that? Some of this comes down to this primary practice that you find in the spiritual path, really of meditation, of coming to know, to experience ambivalence, to maybe label it, to name it, and to accept it, which again brings this other quality that's really upheld, this quality of self-compassion. Wow, this is a difficult decision. Rather than, why am I having such a hard time? What's wrong with me? Why am I smarter than this? I must be flawed in some kind of way. I haven't found that to be really helpful in my life. But it's amazing, my mind loves to go there, especially around difficult decisions. Maybe you can relate to this. So I need this, I need a different direction in my life around something like self-compassion. So I can rest in not knowing, begin to notice ambivalence. And then what I notice happens is it can really normalize that. And as you know, ambivalence is a normal experience. It's just the way the world is that we feel conflicting feelings around the same event. For example, the birth of a child. The acceptable feeling societally is how wonderful it is when a newborn comes into the world. And for those of you who have raised kids, how challenging that can be. How it can upend your life in extremely difficult ways. And sometimes the last word that you would use in moments is joy, right? That's the nature of the birth of a newborn child. And it can be difficult, right? Because there's some feelings, again, that are more acceptable to share than others. Or on the opposite spectrum, when someone dies, so often we can feel the pain of that, the grief around loss. And probably many of you know, especially if you've been in a caregiving role, how it can actually feel relieving. How it can feel like a huge weight has been lifted from the death of someone. And yet one is more acceptable than the other. But here we have these conflicting feelings around the same event. So again, ambivalence is normal. And they've shown, at least in one study, that managers that have more of a sense of ambivalence sometimes around decisions are better decision makers. Because often what they're doing is they're taking in more data into account. And sometimes that's what ambivalence does for me, is it reminds me that maybe I just need more information before I decide. So there is something really useful about it. And yet, And yet it can be debilitating too. So important to learn how to navigate this so we can utilize it rather than be bowled over by it or paralyzed by it. So again, this first point, this resting and not knowing, starting to feel into that quality of not knowing, if it has the flavor of ambivalence, slowing down with it and having this quality of self-compassion and acceptance at times. But of course, that's not the whole picture of decision making. I also need a way of reflecting with difficult decisions. And I think there's many out there, so I'm just going to give you some points that you may or may not find useful around this. And it brings me to this other word that was in the title, which is so important, in at least in early Buddhism, which is this quality of discernment. And I want to talk about this also in terms of this word mindfulness, because I think it's historically really fascinating in terms of the mindfulness movement. I'm sure many of you know this whole mindfulness movement. It's amazing how ubiquitous that word is now. And often the way that mindfulness is defined in these modern times is different than the way it was defined during the Buddha's time. And this difference is really quite interesting. So I want to share with you a definition that is, you'd say, probably one of the most common definitions of mindfulness in our modern times by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who I'm very grateful for because he's done so much research on mindfulness and really opened the door for now decades and decades of research into mindfulness. He defines it this way. He says, mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way. And hopefully you can relate to this definition for those of you who practice mindfulness meditation. So it's paying attention in a particular way. And there's these three qualities to it. On purpose, right? So I'm setting intention to be present. And then I'm doing that in the present moment. So I'm paying attention in this present moment, like the feeling of my breathing, or the sound of my voice coming and going right now, or the feeling of your body sitting in the pew or chair. And then doing that non-judgmentally with acceptance. It's a pretty simple definition of mindfulness. I love it. Don't get me wrong, even though I'm going to critique it. It's a great definition. And actually, what I gave you in this first part around being with ambivalence, what did I use? I used this definition. It's a great definition. But it leaves something out, which I think is really fascinating from the primary definition, is that the quality, when the Buddha was talking about mindfulness, the Pali word is sati, it had another quality to it, which was discernment. And it was mindfulness, that quality of mind, has the ability to discern that which is skillful from that which is unskillful. Or another word that's used is that which is wholesome from that which is unwholesome. Kind of prefer the word skillful and unskillful because it fits better with this notion I gave you at the beginning of having an appropriate response to whatever's in front of us. Well, having that skill of having the appropriate response compared to an unskillful one. But to do that, I need to know what's skillful and unskillful. And I need to exercise in that. So it's not just about being present. And I'm actually going to parse this apart. I'm critiquing. I think it's good to sometimes critique what's in our own spiritual traditions or the things that we value so we can see where it's beneficial and where it can lead us astray. And sometimes the most dangerous thing in our lives is we come to believe or we come to value things, but we don't take a critical eye on them. And I can be misled that way. So yeah, mindfulness in terms of discerning that which is skillful from that which is unskillful. So I want to give some components to this about getting a sense of what's skillful and what's unskillful in these three different domains in terms of having a skillful intention behind my decisions, being sensitive to the impact that my decisions might be making, and then having a broader vision when I'm making decisions. So in terms of intention, what's motivating me to decide this? Is it revenge? Am I angry? Am I hateful? Am I making a decision out of compassion or kindness for myself or another person? Am I just afraid? Is it coming out of confusion? Where are your decisions coming from? Is it merely from worry? Or is it the intention to actually take care? How do those feel different in your experience? What does it feel like when you're worried? What does it feel like where you have a skillful concern for yourself or another person? And this is where I think meditation is so powerful, because I begin to discern how those feel differently. Not only being present, I'm aware of what's skillful and unskillful that's arising in my experience, and then I decide which one to follow. And I think it can be powerful. So this is a quote from the Dalai Lama that I want to share with you. And when I share this quote from the Dalai Lama with you, I want you to remember the context of his life. Here he is, someone who has spent most of his entire adult life really putting so much effort aimed at the well-being and the freedom of people who are living in occupied Tibet, namely from the Tibetan culture. It's been a really difficult journey. And so somebody was asking him about this and the conflicts that he's been involved in. And to also remember, you know, some of us aren't familiar with the news that comes out of mainland China, but the propaganda against the Dalai Lama is unbelievable. Like, a lot of times if you meet people from mainland China, the news they get is really quite different. Like, for them, like, one news story that happened in the last 15 years is that the Dalai Lama was a head of a terrorist organization that was going to be carrying out terrorist plots in mainland China. And just really extreme details in terms of this. So he's bombarded by all these different views about him. And somebody was asking him about this, and he said, you know, some people, they call me a living Buddha. And then he said, you know, I'm just a simple Buddhist monk, which I really appreciate his humility. And others, they call me a wolf in monk's clothing. Sorry for dissing wolves. I really love wolves. But but what I do is that none of that is important to me, because what I do is I look back at my own intention, and if my intention is sincere, or we could say skillful, then that is what is important. I find that so powerful for myself. Can I move in the world being clear about what my intentions are? And I find this really important, because many of the decisions that I make go the wrong way, because that's the way life is. My life doesn't always end up in this direction the way I want it to. I'm not in complete control of it. I'm not in control of the people around me or the world I live in. This is the way it is. But what I can be clear is the intention that I'm placing around the decisions I'm making. So this one piece, being clear about your intention, being clear about what are the skillful ones and what are the unskillful ones. And then there's the second piece around impact. So once the Buddha was sharing a teaching with his son, Rahula, and it was around Rahula, his son, getting clear about what action should I engage in my life? How do I decide this? And he gave him another way of reflecting. And he said, Rahula, this is what you should do, is you should reflect before you do an action. Is it a skillful intention that's there? And then while you're doing that action or making that decision, is it still skillful? And then even more importantly, what happens afterwards? Is it skillful or unskillful is how it unfolds. And again, I found this so important because sometimes I can have the best of intentions, but the impact of what I'm doing can be really so harmful. And this is so important for me as I move forward, is how does this land for the other person? But I don't say, well, I had good intentions, but maybe it comes across in a way that's really quite harmful. You know, I remember a friend of mine, who is a Native American, and they were actually at a meditation retreat. And the example that was given of the kind of an ideal vision of what it is to be on a spiritual path was the example of Christopher Columbus. That teacher had a wholesome, a skillful intention, but the impact was incredibly harmful. This is why this is important. Because how it can affect others if we're not aware of it. We can just throw a story out like that and we're not aware of the context that we're talking in, the devastation and the harm that name gives to many people in this country. So intention, but it has to be modulated by impact and that sensitivity. And then lastly, vision. And I want to point out, there's so many different ways of doing this. I want to share with you a kind of vision that comes from this Dharma teacher, Buddhist teacher, Joanna Macy. And many of you might know her because of all the environmental activism that she's done in really wonderful ways. And again, she's critiquing in some ways how we see the unfolding of time. And sometimes it's critiquing this idea that all we have is now. It's kind of a hip Buddhist thing, right? Just gotta be in the present. Is that what this is about? Just being in the present? I mean, teachers always talk about that. I always talk about it. Folks, you watch out. And it's a really great story. But I want to be sensitive to where it has its limits. Because she says this conception of time is kind of like a one-way arrow where the past is forever behind us, gone, irretrievable, lost, of no regard. It's kind of what comes with it, just being in the present. And the future never arises. It's just some abstraction. And here we are, marooned in the present. And she goes as far as to say that sometimes this limited way of thinking about time might be interrelated with environmental catastrophe and how we relate to the environment in the situation that we're in right now in terms of what's going on to our planet. And so she proposes a different kind of time to sense into at times, which she calls deep time, which I just want to take you through to maybe get a little bit of a taste of this. What is it to sense into deep time to help us make decisions, both in our personal lives, but also these decisions that impact the world that we live in? So as I speak these words, I invite you to get a feeling sense of this. You can either keep your eyes open or have your eyes down or closed. Either way, but what I invite you to do is, as I'm sharing this with you, is to feel some of this, not to think about it, but to feel some of it. And what Joanna Macy invites us to do, which I invite you to do right now, is to see if you can get a feeling sense of the treasures and gifts that we've been given from the past. The treasures and gifts from our ancestors. The ancestors from our family lineage. Yes, when you sense into those who have come before you in your family. Yes, it will be filled probably with both joy and sorrow, but there's probably gifts in there, treasures in there of what you've been given generations back from parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents. and even further back. To feel right now those joys and sorrows and possibly gifts from our family ancestry. And not only to feel right now the treasures and gifts from your family ancestry, but you could say also the treasures and gifts that have been given to you from your evolutionary ancestry. It amazes me what I've been given by all the creatures who come before me in this lineage of being a human being in terms of evolution. The primates and other mammals who are our ancestors, who over millions of years have given through their trials and tribulations and the shaping of their bodies on this planet, have brought us here in this form. All the way back to the very first forms of life, the single-celled organisms that were here at the beginning. Right now, in this moment, you carry with you vast gifts and treasures from the past. Can you feel that? Can you honor that, of what you've been given to be here right now? Which includes the great diversity of animal and plant life, and the habitats that have made it possible for me and you to be here. The treasures and gifts from your past. What would it be like to carry that forward, to carry that along in your decisions? And also to recognize, yes, the present, all the beings that make it possible for us to continue to be here. Whether it be your community around you or the environment around you. Feeling into this interdependent web that's happening right now, that is such a gift and treasure of this present time. And then finally, I invite you right now to sense into this potential that all of you have to offer gifts and treasures to generations to come. What are you going to leave for all the future beings in future time? What do you want to make sure not to leave? What does it feel like to take into account the generations that come after you? To actually make an offering, to continue the gifts and treasures that you've been given. You can simply open your eyes and come back into the room. So this is one way to sense into decisions sometimes, is deep time. You know, just last month when I was playing around with this, it makes such a big difference around the decisions I'm making. Yes, it complicates them, and I want some of my decisions to be complicated rather than be simple. But it gives me a different feeling of what it is to move in the world, which to me is what a spiritual path is about, is allowing me to have a different sense of a different way of being in the world. So again, here are these reflections that I'm offering to you of navigating decisions, difficult decisions, this resting and not knowing, opening to ambivalence, noticing how it can be so beneficial. practicing discernment, noticing what's skillful in terms of your intention, noticing the impact, and having some kind of vision for where we're headed and where we come from. So thank you very much for tonight, and thank you for your attention, and I think we'll have a sweet potluck if you want to stick around. So thank you very much.